Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm pleased to have as my guest today D.W. Buffa. And I read Mr. Buffa for the first time in 1997 when his first book, The Defense, was published. Mr. Buffa was nominated for an Edgar in 2002 for The Judgment, and the novel we'll be discussing today is Trial by Fire, which has recently been published by Putnam and is currently available in your bookstores. And first of all, Mr. Buffa, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go back for a moment to The Defense. And when Joseph Antonelli, who is the character which we'll be discussing today, I was very interested that Leopold Rifkin, one of the characters in the first novel, refers to Antonelli as a completely erotic human being. That phrase kind of jumped out at me, and I was wondering when you wrote that, what you meant with the character.
Part of it is the result of my, I suppose, somewhat peculiar training. I was a graduate student and studied political philosophy at the University of Chicago years ago, and the great teacher of political philosophy then was a man named Leo Strauss, who took rather seriously what ancient Greek thinkers wrote and thought. And there is a whole strand of thought in the works of Plato having to do with the notion of eroticism, and it's much more broadly meant than what we tend to mean by it today. It isn't simply about sex, it's about this sort of longing that human beings have to grasp something larger than themselves, to understand things larger than themselves. So when Rifkin, who I tried to make into a very learned judge and a very learned human being, makes this comment about Antonelli, what Rifkin is really telling him is that Antonelli has this gift or curse, whatever you want to call it, which makes Antonelli always striving to be to get something beyond what he's already got. And I don't mean in a material sense, but to become better than he is. He's always looking for something that is going to make him understand something he doesn't already understand. The difference between Rifkin and Antonelli, I think, is that Rifkin has a much better sense. Rifkin's also much older, but Rifkin has a much better sense as to what Antonelli is really looking for. Antonelli hasn't quite figured that out.
And in The Defense, we learn that Antonelli, as a young boy, loved to go to the movies, and that a lot of his personal philosophy was shaped by the old black and white movies, wasn't it?
Well, that's largely autobiographical on my part, because I used to go to those black and white movies, and sure, the movies that they used to make about lawyers, and I think I tried to describe this in The Defense in connection with Antonelli's early years. You know, the movies, there'd usually be this attorney who was very idealistic, and he'd get this case in which everybody thought he was going to lose, and all the evidence would point to the guilt of the defendant, but the attorney believed in his innocence, and somehow, by luck and hard work, right at the end, the lawyer would come up with a surprise witness or find something and would save this poor fellow just right at the end of the trial. So, yeah, those of us who grew up at that time and saw those kinds of movies and read those kinds of books, that's what we used to think a defense lawyer was supposed to be, not somebody who was always talking about himself on television, but somebody who really believed in the innocence of at least some of his clients and worked very hard to prove it.
Now, you make an interesting point there, and the new book which we're going to be discussing is Trial by Fire, and it's a novel which I enjoyed immensely, by the way. And one of the overriding themes of Trial by Fire is the role that television has now plays in the media circus that surrounds trials. And the day we're talking is just a couple days after the Michael Jackson case, and I heard one of the talking heads on television compare Tom Mesereau to Atticus Finch, and I almost fell out of my chair. And how do you react when you hear something like that as an attorney, in the light of what we're, you know, what we're seeing today?
Well, it's unfair. I don't exactly the kind of lawyer we were just talking about. Atticus Finch was, for those who haven't read To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus, or seen the movie when Gregory Peck played the part. Parenthetically, sometime about a year ago, I saw on some PBS show a long interview with Gregory Peck, and they asked him what his favorite role was, and he, without any hesitation whatsoever, said Atticus Finch. Atticus Finch was this attorney in the South in the days of segregation, and a black man was charged with crime, and Finch, trying the case to an all-white jury, throws everything he's got into the case, and it's really a book that people probably now ought to go back and read again. But Finch was somebody who wasn't in for publicity, and it wasn't the kind of trial that anybody outside that small Southern community was going to follow. But now in the age of television, because there's always got to be some story that's on television, somehow, and sometimes it's just a matter of luck, something happens, television seizes on it, and as soon as that happens, it's the story that everybody wants to know about. And what we've become is not simply a nation of voyeurs, but we start to form what I describe in Trial by Fire as an electronic lynch mob, in which everybody feels this obligation to express an opinion about whether somebody who might not even yet be charged with a crime is guilty of it or not. There was a case here in Northern California, which became the case that everybody in the country was following, the Scott Peterson case. And when that started out with his pregnant wife gone missing, which of course created a lot of attention and drew a lot of the initial television coverage, everybody was looking at this. And then of course when he was became a suspect, then everybody closed in. I was sitting watching the news one evening, and they had one of these talking heads on, a young woman who used to be a prosecutor. And this is before Peterson was ever arrested. And she made the remark, he must be guilty because he grew a goatee. I almost fell off the chair. We're now making judgments about whether somebody committed a crime, one, before they're charged with it, and secondly, based entirely upon their physical appearance. Anyway, that sort of gave me the idea for the book that became Trial by Fire. And but I really started thinking about it back in the days of the O.J. Simpson case, because it was just stunning how everybody was so convinced of one thing or the other. Either he was guilty or he wasn't guilty. And I started thinking about, you know, that what-if question that writers tend to ask. What if somebody was charged with a crime, a terrible crime? Everybody in the country is absolutely certain that he did it because everybody on television says he did. And then it turns out he didn't do it. That became the basis for Trial by Fire.
Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that Antonelli always asks that I like is he challenges judges and juries, and one of his things is it better that the guilty go free than that the innocent be convicted? And Antonelli is still very concerned that we have the presumption of innocence in this country, but that seems to be getting run over right now, doesn't it? And it seems that Antonelli is on a personal campaign just to make sure that we still remember that our legal system is based on a presumption of innocence.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I practiced, I was a criminal defense lawyer for about 10 years, and during voir dire, that process by which you select the jury, I would often refer to there's one famous line that, of course, nobody remembers anymore, and it comes out of Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England, which is a four-volume work that everybody who was involved in the founding of the United States, everybody at least who became a lawyer, had read. That's what you did to become a lawyer. You read Blackstone, and then you practiced with some experienced lawyer. But the line in Blackstone, which refers to the English system, is that it is better that 10 guilty men go free than that one innocent man be convicted. The thing that people don't quite grasp, because nobody on television ever bothers to stop to tell them this, is that what goes on in the trial isn't, the jury isn't asked to decide is somebody innocent. They're asked to decide, has the state proven beyond that famous reasonable doubt that this person is guilty? So what's really going on in a trial, and I think I have Antonelli actually used this phrase in trial by fire during a trial. The question isn't can we prove this person is innocent? The question is, has the state proven guilt beyond a reasonable doubt? The state is really on trial. Because anybody can accuse anybody of anything. The question is, can you prove it?
Mm-hmm. And the phrase you used, the electronic lynch mob, that did jump out at me when I read the book, and it is so true. And at one point in Trial by Fire, which I think is a very relevant book in the world we live in today, they ask Antonelli he's kind of talking about a change of venue, and the judge asks him where the change of venue might take place, and he says China.
Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, they move. Going for a change of venue in a case that's being covered by television is almost a joke, because if you've got enough television coverage before the trial ever happens, everybody has heard about this thing. And moreover, let me give you what may at first seem kind of a bizarre example. But in the early days of trial by jury, that famous phrase, trial by your peers, that was meant seriously. It meant that you'd be put on trial, and the judgment about whether you were guilty or not would be made by 12 people who lived in the same community who basically knew you. They knew you, and they knew the witnesses. So knowing people, you have a better idea as to whether they're likely to be the sort of people that tell the truth all the time, or whether the kind of people who lie. Now, the system has changed, because if you're called up for jury duty, one of the first questions you get asked, do you know the lawyers, do you know the parties, do you know any of the witnesses that are going to appear at the case? And if you do, you're off the jury. It's very difficult to tell if somebody's lying if you don't know them. But anyway, now, instead of a local community, we all live in this sort of electronic community, in which we sort of feel, and it's a very odd thing, but we sort of feel like we know better people that we see on television that we've never actually met than we do the person who lives down the street from us. So television has, in that sense, changed everything.
And Antonelli, he does not want to, what happens is that Albert Craven, his partner, really wants him to go on to a television show because Henry Godwin, one of his biggest clients, wants him to appear and thinks he'll be good on television, and Antonelli really fights it.
Yes.
And but then he decides that perhaps he can use it to his advantage, doesn't he?
Yes. I want to set it up so that Antonelli, who really is not interested in going on television, and of course everybody is astonished at this, and in that conversation that you just mentioned where Craven is talking to Antonelli about why he should go on the show, Antonelli says he has no interest in going on television, and Craven says everybody wants to be on television. Well, everybody does, as it turns out. So Antonelli goes on this talking head show where he meets Julian Sinclair, who's this young law professor over at Berkeley, who then later gets accused of murder. Antonelli is convinced that Julian Sinclair is innocent, but this becomes the trial, this becomes this month's trial of the century, in which television is covering it and nothing else, and everybody's talking about it on television, and everybody knows that Julian Sinclair is guilty, everybody except Antonelli. So Antonelli then figures, given all the publicity, that he's got no choice but to go back on television and try to argue the case even before it goes to trial. Then, without giving too much of the story away, they go to trial, and we'll have to give this part of it away, I suppose. They go to trial, and Antonelli, who's never lost a case he should have won, loses this one. But then most of the book, most of the story, is about what happens when Antonelli tries to correct this terrible injustice, and that in turn involves going back on television, and finally it involves Antonelli ending up with a television show of his own, in which he takes on everybody who's been involved in the trial and tries to show that Sinclair is really innocent.
And I guess that begs the question, is television such an integral part of major trials these days that an attorney like Antonelli really sees this as something that he has to participate in?
Well, in the story at least, yes, he does, absolutely, because it's the only way in which he can get anybody's attention on what he thinks really happened. And in the story, Antonelli, even at trial, says who did it, and it's the husband of the young woman who was killed. And the only way he can draw this guy out and hope that he makes some kind of a mistake, which will then enable Antonelli to try to get some proof by which he can prove that this fellow is guilty and that Julian Sinclair is innocent, is go on television and in effect, he flat out says, this is the guy who killed Daphne McMillan, and he wants this guy to sue him. So that becomes the setup. But in terms of what's going on, so to speak, in the real world, television has created this rush to judgment in which, in those cases that television covers, especially if they start covering it much before the trial, I think it becomes almost impossible to have anything like the semblance of a fair trial. I might mention, in Great Britain, you're simply not allowed to comment on the case. I don't mean just the lawyers, anybody. Nobody can comment on a trial while it's in progress. You cannot comment on the case until after the verdict's been reached. If you do, you're going to jail. Now, everybody would scream about that in this country because of the so-called right to know. But you've got several interests involved here, one of which is again, the right to fair trial.
They must think we're crazy in Great Britain.
I think they probably do, yeah.
And they're probably right.
Maybe.
What was it about Julian Sinclair that attracted Antonelli so much? Did he remind Antonelli of himself as a young man?
Somebody in Trial by Fire, one of the other characters at some point makes exactly that remark, that Sinclair reminds Antonelli of himself, and he probably reminds Antonelli of what Antonelli would have liked to have been like at that age, if I can put it in those sort of convoluted terms. Sinclair is brilliant. Sinclair has very little interest in the things that most people have an interest in. He speaks his mind. He has sort of a detached view of the world. And he also has a fairly old-fashioned view about certain kinds of things, because in the relationship he has with Daphne McMillan, though they frequently spend a lot of time together, she's married to somebody else, he views it as sort of a point of honor that nothing physical happened between the two of them, which in turn, and again this ties into the sort of thing that television likes to talk about all the time, that makes Sinclair sort of an object of ridicule at the trial and makes him, in the judgment of the prosecutor and the people on the jury and that wider television audience, somebody who simply can't be believed, because nobody's going to believe that he could spend the night with this beautiful woman and that there was no sexual relation between them.
Now, when we look at it, thank you for that answer. One of the things that drew me to your writing, Mr. Buffa, is in the first book, The Defense, the reading list that Antonelli has is Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, Pushkin, Dickens, E.M. Forster, Ford Madox Ford, Flaubert, and he regularly rereads Melville's Billy Budd. And I must say, that was one of the things, when I first read that, I said, this is a man after my own heart.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And I think that reading background, it permeates the series, the Antonelli series, and I think that's one of the things which makes it so appealing to me as a reader, is that literary quality that it does have.
I wanted to create a character, an attorney, who was a very serious man. And one of the things that any lawyer should do, and I'm not sure who first made this remark, might have been F. Lee Bailey, who, by the way, majored in English literature at Harvard.
Well, did he really?
Graduate. Yeah. And but a lot of lawyers now come out, and all they've ever read are law books. hour every night reading something that doesn't have anything directly to do with the law. And that for two reasons. One, when you're talking to a jury, it's very important that you're able to relate to those people. And of course, it's helpful if you know something other than the narrow teachings of the law. The second reason is it's simply better for a human being to gain some breadth and depth from books written in, great books. So with Antonelli, I wanted him to have that kind of an interest. When he meets, and he's known Leopold Rifkin in the defense for years, and Rifkin reads things, basically political philosophy, Antonelli isn't at that level. But Antonelli is somebody who, again, has that erotic longing, as Rifkin puts it, for something better than what he already knows. So he has made a study and a habit of reading great books. So I had him, I set it up so that he'd read most of the major Russian writers. And I had him, as someone who would go back and reread things like Billy Budd, precisely because, if you ever have a chance to, those of you who haven't had a chance to read Billy Budd, you should, because what it really sets up is the tension between morality and the law, or the rules that we all as a group have to live by, and what is sometimes required of us as individuals in terms of right moral conduct. There's always a tension, by the way, between the law and morality in any case, because the law is made up of rules that apply across the board. And there are always differences, qualifications, slight changes in factual situations. So the two people, for example, who both committed the same crime probably shouldn't always be given exactly the same punishment. Anyway, it's a very large question. But I wanted Antonelli to be somebody who had an interest in those kinds of things. I also, by the way, although this wasn't your question, deliberately made Antonelli somebody who had a Sicilian last name, because I'm Sicilian, and I got sick to death of all these portrayals of Sicilians as being, you know, sort of illiterate thugs who can only speak in obscenities.
Mm-hmm. And one of the books I strongly, like I say, I strongly recommend Trial by Fire. I also strongly recommend The Defense, because there's actually a very nice reading list that the reader gets at the end of the book, and we won't give away the end of the book. But Antonelli comes into what for me would be the mother load of reading lists and access to wonderful books at the end. And I've actually kind of started writing some of the titles down as things that I can go back and either read or reread. And that's just kind of an additional little bonus of The Defense.
That's terrific. Thanks.
Mr. Buff, before we wrap up here, there was a quote in Trial by Fire that again, some of these just jumped out at me, and this one was on page 246, and it says, "Has justice come to mean one thing for the rich and privileged few and something else for the great majority of us who have never been on television?" And you've given a lot of thought to this, and what is your feeling on that? Have we gotten that far down the road that we have, that's become reality, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. But I don't think it's such a recent development. I think it's been going on for quite a long time. It's probably become, just as the disparity between rich and poor in this country has grown greater over the last 5 to 10 years, the difference in treatment in the courts has probably grown greater too. A lot of it has to do with the obvious fact that if you're somebody with unlimited amounts of money, and you're accused of a crime, you can hire a very expensive attorney who in turn then have the resources with which to hire not only private detectives, but the kind of scientific expert, other kinds of researchers who can put together an amazing kind of case. Most of the time that I was practicing criminal law, I handled what's called indigent defense, and that means you're representing people who can't afford to hire their own attorney, so the court appoints somebody. I loved the work. I loved being in court. I didn't much like what went on outside of court, but I loved being in court. I loved doing trial work, but you are handling a very large caseload, and a trial might last 2-3 days. When you start talking about spending millions of dollars, we can file every kind of motion. You can request all sorts of scientific tests. Then trials start to drag on for a very long time. And as we've seen in recent years, defendants who may or may not have been innocent end up being acquitted because there's a sense in which the defense team is able to almost exhaust the prosecution, which is very unusual. I don't know. I there are a couple things you could do. One is simply to try to increase the level of the quality of people doing indigent defense work. I think it would also, though, be a good idea if we somehow went back to an older idea in which very prominent attorneys, very successful attorneys, started devoting some small portion of their time to taking on cases for which they're not paid. You know, you're supposed to become a lawyer not because you want to make a lot of money, but because you want to be a terrific lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Buffett, thank you so much for taking time out this morning to talk with us. I wish you the best of luck with Trial by Fire. I recommend all of the books in the series to the listeners, and hopefully we can catch up with you again when the next book comes out.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Enjoyed it.